Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, yeah, A-Dream, in the building, shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
And we finna go in, look.
Yes, sir.
Look, we came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time, sit and acknowledge it. Positive, uplifting, and honest here. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See, Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn in the building. All the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging echoes, so if you ain't fragile, through the net connection, we streaming you to Mexico.
So welcome to the life of Bree, breaking down relationships to the third degree.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
From politics to the current events, economics to race, whether you're poor or you're rich.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
Coming to you live and streaming to all four points of the globe. It's your girl, Brooklyn born and Crown Heights raised. Living life and breathing life. It's Bree, baby.
Peace and blessings. You've reached the Bree Life Radio Show. And tonight, we're going to have a discussion, which is going to be part two of a conversation that we had 2 weeks ago regarding child support and child custody issues, whether it's friend or foe. Tonight, I'll be shortly joined with Alex Leith, Alex W. Leith. And I'm also being joined tonight with two guest panelists, Michael McCormick and General Parker. I'm going to bring them on the line while we're waiting for Alex to join us. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for joining me again today. I've gotten a lot of good feedback from a lot of listeners from our show 2 weeks ago, and a lot of emails. So, and people were a little disappointed that we didn't have an opportunity to keep to take questions early on in the discussion. But what I'm going to shoot for us to do tonight, if we could do it a little different, I'm going to, at about 10 o'clock, open up the phone lines. But there's a lot of information for us to get out, and I want to start by, General, if you could just introduce yourself to our listening audience, and then, Michael, if you could do the same, and then shortly we'll be joined by Alex W. Leith, and then we'll begin our discussion.
Hi. Thanks again, Sabrina, for having us on, and I really appreciate everything that you're doing. My name is General Parker, and I'm executive director for an organization called Illinois Fathers. And we believe that children need both parents, and we do everything within our power to advocate for mostly non-custodial parents, but really we work on the behalf of the children.
Okay.
And I'm Mike McCormick. I'm the executive director of the American Coalition for Fathers and Children. We're located in Washington, D.C., and we are a shared parenting organization. We're trying to make sure that kids are able to keep a maximum relationship with both parents, even if the parents have never been married or are currently divorced.
Okay. Well, again, thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining us this evening. Let's start right with where you left off talking about shared custody. It's amazing what this conversation that we had 2 weeks ago has really like mushroomed into, for just in my own personal life and with some colleagues of mine. I've been getting all types of calls about court actions that my friends are in the midst of being party to with regards to custody and child support, of course. And, you know, Michael, if you could, just for our listening audience, could you describe, can you give like an abridged definition of some of the types of custody that exist. I know there's shared custody, there's joint physical custody. If you could just go briefly down the list of all in each one and give a definition, because that was one of the emails that I received last week, that they would, you know, some of the listeners would like to have a better understanding of what types of custodies are sort of available for them to pursue as they're thinking about either starting a new court action or modifying an existing one.
Okay, let's just start with the two broad overviews. There's two types of broad types of custody. One is legal custody, and that has to do with who's going to make decisions about the child. And then the other one is physical custody. So you can think of legal custody as the individual who actually will have the legal authority to make decisions about what happens in that child's life. And then the physical custody is how the child divides time, where and when. And out of that, let's just keep on the legal custody side, you can have joint legal custody or you can have sole legal custody. If there is joint legal custody, then under the law, what is supposed to happen is that the parents are supposed to be making the major decisions that affect the child and the child's life. They're supposed to do that together. That's why it's called joint legal custody. If one parent has sole legal custody, then that parent has the legal authority to make all of the binding decisions about that child's life, such as where they're going to go to school, who their doctors are going to be, who will make decisions about their religious upbringing, those types of questions. The parent with legal custody, with sole legal custody, has the sole right to make those decisions. So if it's joint legal custody, both parents make that decision. If it's sole legal custody, only one parent will make that decision, the parent with that custody. On the other side, there's physical custody, and it's the same thing. There's joint physical custody, which means that both parents have a legal recognized physical custody of the child. One parent will typically be the primary custodial parent. The other one will be the non-custodial parent. And the non-custodial parent will have legal custody, legal physical custody of the child, but it will be for particular periods of time. They will have a visitation schedule set out. And during that time, so there's the idea that there is joint physical custody. If a parent has sole physical custody of the child, then the other parent may have visitation access, but doesn't have any legal recognition that they actually have any physical custody of the child. So out of those two, there is legal custody, there is physical custody, there is sole legal custody, joint legal custody, there can be sole physical custody and joint physical custody. Most parents would like to have joint legal and physical custody. But even for parents who have joint legal and physical custody, what you will see is that joint physical custody does not mean that the child will spend equal amounts of time with both parents. Joint physical custody does not mean that that children will spend equal time with both parents. Joint legal custody oftentimes is a misnomer as well, because oftentimes what we see is that the parent with the majority of the time will be considered the primary custodial parent, and they will be making those decisions, even though the other parent has joint legal decision-making. In practicality, oftentimes they don't. But optimally, a person wants to have joint legal and physical custody of the child. And the other thing that it makes it easier if, let's say, something happens to the custodial parent, it makes it easier for the other parent to actually assume custody of their child, let's say in the event that a custodial parent passes away. But those are the basic kinds of custody that are available. A lot of states are moving away from the idea of calling it custody, and so they're using the term. For instance, Arizona just passed a law that they're going to call it parenting responsibilities and parenting time. And so there will be an allocation of parenting responsibilities, and then there'll be an allocation of parenting time. And the idea is that we shouldn't be looking at one parent as being the dominant parent and the other parent being the secondary parent. The law is trying to move very slowly, but is trying to start moving in the direction of recognizing that, that children really do need both of their parents.
Okay. Wow. You said that all in a mouthful. Wow. Here's the thing. I've been also getting, I've been not so much in the hot seat this week, but there there were some women listeners from a couple of weeks ago feeling sort of slighted. And my response to them is that they should have called in, because we certainly offered a forum for the women to be heard. I want to make it clear to my women listeners that, you know, I am not anti-woman on this issue. What I am anti is any parent, whether it be the man or the woman, the father or the mother, manipulating their position to try to get money or to turn one parent, the child against one parent or the other. I'm not pro men and anti woman on this issue. I'm what's the best thing for the child. So I just had to get that out there. And there's a few people that contacted me this evening and said that this is a great issue. They happen to be women. And they promised me that they'll call in our second hour, because they want their voices to be heard too. And I'm sure, General, you feel as I do. We've had personal conversations about this issue. And no one is anti the woman's view, but we want what's always best for the child. And I'll segue that point to you so that you can be heard on this issue too.
Right. I was just going to say that you'll find that Mike and I, along with our organization, we believe the same way. We're not anti-women, and we're not anti-male. What we are, we're opposed to a system of government that would take a situation as emotionally charged as this one can be and use it for monetary purposes, you know, and try to politicize and monetize it and just wreak havoc on our communities and our children and our families. And that's exactly what's going on. And I think that most of the people that get upset with us speaking out about this issue are the people who had the most to lose, because they want to keep control of the situation and keep control of the relationship and keep control of the situation between they want to maintain control over the child so they can keep control over the other parent. And that's exactly what goes on. And we've been against that ever since I've met Mike. You know, the only people that stand to win from this are the lawyers and the courts, because the more you in conflict with each other, the more money they make, and the more our children become dysfunctional. You know, we see it out here in society every day. And I'm the one that has to deal with that, because I kind of go to all these different seminars and all these different organizations, all these different rallies. I got to go to all these different candlelight vigils for kids are acting out because their parents aren't around, and they're either getting in trouble or they're shooting each other, and, you know, this stuff's got to stop, you know.
Right.
Got to stop.
Yeah. Now, just to segue, first I want to say that I'm bringing my co-host tonight on the line, Alex W. Lee. He joined us 2 weeks ago. Alex, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Bree. What's happening, General?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. We're being joined tonight with Michael and General. Say hello.
Yeah. Hey, General, how you doing? What's up, Mike?
Hey, how
are
you?
Alex, how are you?
I'm doing great.
The next thing that I wanted to talk about was today I had a very disturbing call from a friend of mine, and he's going through quite a bit himself, and And it's just really unfortunate. He's quite stressed out. Mike, you might be able to make heads or tail of this situation. And it's not that uncommon, what I'm about, the story that I'm about to tell you. He's been paying child support. And what has happened is that his ex-wife has allowed another individual to claim his daughter on their tax return. So now he owes something like $20,000. He got hit for $20,000 this past tax season in some kind of back taxes because they're saying that he wasn't supposed to, you know, for the last few years, he wasn't supposed to be claiming his daughter because somebody else was. So what happened to him, his last paycheck, he came home with $50. And this is a man that makes almost $100,000, if not more than a little over $100,000 a year. And he came home with $50. And then, that not to add insult to injury, this week, he was hit with child support papers. So he went to court, and his ex-wife, who's not working, wants more money. I don't know how the formula works for this, for the calculations of child support, but she's not working, and he was saying to the magistrate, well, you know, Why isn't her former position or her former career being taken into consideration when it comes to child support? So the magistrate went on to ask her, was she well abled and, you know, to work, and, you know, did she have any medical reasons that could prevent her from working? All these questions, and then he goes on to say that the magistrate put in her part of the calculations, like if, for instance, she was making minimum wage, and I saw that as being sort of a benefit to him, because if she's not working and that's part of the formula, he would wind up having to pay more money. Or am I wrong? And he was quite upset.
Well, what you're seeing is quite common. She's not working now, and they're not imputing her income. When the courts impute income to an individual, they say, you could be earning this, you're not, so we're going to base your support obligation on what you could be earning rather than what you are earning. When there is no actual income, oftentimes the child support folks will use the minimum wage, you know, use the minimum wage number. And where that makes a difference, what state was this in with your friend?
Maryland.
In Maryland, yeah. Maryland, you know, Maryland uses a, Maryland is actually a income share state as far as child support goes. So what they do is they take those numbers, but if he's calculated $100,000 a year and she's calculated at minimum wage, then he's still, you know, that what they do is they say, okay, here's the total income, here's how many kids there are, this is what the monthly child support obligation would be with that number of children at that income level, and then what they do is they say, okay, if he earns 90% of the income, then he has to pay 90% of that total child support obligation. And unfortunately, just 2 years ago, Maryland raised all of its child support guideline numbers. They lowered them at the lowest income levels, but they raised them for over 75% of people in Maryland saw their child support, the guidelines go up. And so he would have been, with his income, in that group of people that actually would be now paying under a higher guideline amount. But what it sounds like the way they calculated his child support is the way the law allows for it to be calculated. Now, whether or not, you know, it's very difficult for the court to actually come in. It's really interesting how this is done, because there are many, many places where the courts will impute income to an individual based on their ability to earn, not on what they are actually earning. But we see it happen more often than not that men are imputed a higher level of income than what we see women imputed a higher level of income. Personally, I happen to think that that's just a wrong thing to be doing across the board. And the fact of the matter is that there was a study that actually came out yesterday that says that, in many instances, children are actually better off if there is no court-ordered child support, because the parent is more inclined to support their child when they're not ordered to do so than when they are ordered to do so. And that situation was looking at, low-income cases. But as far as what he's doing right now,
that's
it sounds like...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is interesting, because what they found at the real low income levels with child support is that when you get the court involved, what you find is that it drives the paying parent out of the child's life, because oftentimes they cannot afford the amount of obligation. And if the mother has been taking any kind of state welfare benefits, the money that the father pays oftentimes doesn't even get to the family. It just goes to pay back the state for what the state has been putting out in welfare benefits. So the dad says, why should I be paying? Let's say, you know, it's the dad that's paying. He'll say, why should I be paying this anyway? It never gets to my kid or never gets to my family to begin with. And it's really, you know, we talked quite a bit about this the last time, where the government is actually, if the parent that has the children has been on welfare, oftentimes the federal government keeps the child support that the other parent is paying. And what this study says is that that's a disincentive to getting people to stay involved with their kids. And oftentimes they find that that paying parent is just dropping out of the kids' lives because of the court's interference in the relationship. So it's really, you know, it's really kind of interesting. It sounds like what's happening to your friend in Maryland is that they are following the statutes. And Maryland actually just hired a new child support enforcement director late last year, and Maryland is actually getting much tougher on child support enforcement now. And they're doing a number of different things to increase enforcement efforts there. By the same token, as far as the issue of somebody else claiming his daughter on their tax return, I'm not sure exactly how that happened or why he was, you know, why they went after him for the lost taxes. That sounds to me like a situation where if he doesn't, you know, he's got to have her, if she's the custodial parent, she has to give him a form that says that he is able to claim the child, or it has to be written into their divorce decree who gets to claim the child on the taxes. And if that's not written into his decree, and she is that primary custodial parent that we talked about, she's got the right to claim the child on her taxes.
Claiming it on her taxes. She had another person claiming their daughter.
Yeah, and that's where this gets kind of sticky from where I sit, because I don't know what kind of particular, you know, legal authority that she would have to give an exemption that belongs to her, that she could just go ahead and say, "Oh, you take it," and I would say that that situation is one that he's just going to have to work through and work out to see what he can get, because it wouldn't seem to make sense that a judge would look at that and say, "Oh yeah, it's okay for you to give the exemption to somebody else, not give it to the other parent," if that custodial parent wasn't taking the exemption themselves. I just don't know that, where she gets the authority to give the exemption away.
Can I interject one second?
Go ahead, Alex.
Hello?
Yes, Alex. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What I want to say is, first of all, to me, that situation is rampant, which means people claiming children for taxes that aren't theirs. I've been hearing about this time and time again for years now, and more than likely, I'm not saying it is a situation like this, but more than likely, it's probably a family member that she's helping out by doing that, or maybe even a guy that she's sleeping with. It may even be a lover. But for me, it sounds like a tax fraud situation.
Exactly.
Because if he's paying support for his child, there's no way anybody can be claiming taxes to claim responsibility for that child if he's paying his proper support. You know, so to me, that sounds like a tax fraud situation. And if it's a situation where him and his ex are not friendly, and she's been trying to make life a living hell for him, I would pursue that tax fraud because that's exactly what that is.
Today he wrote a letter to the IRS, and he's also talked to them because when he saw his pay stub and it only had $50 in it, he couldn't believe it. And then when he did the due diligence and, you know, followed the money or lack thereof, you know, he came to understand why he only had $50 in his check.
Well, I'll tell you another one that we see quite often is that a mother will go on welfare and get welfare benefits and go on welfare in her maiden name and then get child support under her married name. And that's welfare fraud as well, because if she's receiving child support, she's supposed to report that and report what she's actually receiving. So we'll see, we see pretty regularly that a lot of mothers will actually go on welfare and get the welfare benefits under their maiden name. But then when it comes to child support, they're getting paid child support under their married name, and you know, the welfare agency's not any the wiser, and they're essentially double-dipping on the system at that point.
Well, you know what, Mike? And you know what happens, Mike, in these situations is that we know the fraud that's happening. What happens is when a woman is found out to be doing this, she gets a slap on the wrist, which encourages other women to go out and repeat this behavior. This is why it's rampant, because women get a pass, but everybody's focusing on the man, putting him in jail, garnishing his wages, doing this to him, doing that to him, and she's running rampant. Now, Brian in the beginning said, look, this is not a male-female thing. There are some women who are dealing with child support issues and not receiving support or whatever. We understand that. But as a general rule, the child ends up with the female, and she runs rampant through the system because she knows how to manipulate the system, because she was taught that by those who went before her, and by the system itself teaches them how to manipulate it.
And that is the problem. You're exactly right, Alex, is that this, we have a system that has created a series of incentives for what would, you know, normally be called bad behavior. And I mean, it was, you know, up until 1996, you know, it was common that the more children, every time you had another child, you increased the amount of your welfare benefits. And it was only in 1996 that there were caps put on that in terms of number of children and the amount of, number of years that you could stay on welfare benefits. But it was actually government policies and laws itself that encouraged the breakdown of the family. And if you looked at it, what you ended up in a situation was where, and it didn't matter if it was African American or if it was Caucasian or what the color of the family was, you had a situation where that a middle class family had to think two or three times real hard about it if they were going to have more than, you know, one or two children. And then you had in the other instance where, you know, there were women that were having multiple children without ever having any fathers for those children or without having a steady relationship with any particular father, and there was no disincentive for them to stop having more children. And it has become, and this was directly attributable to the government policies that were in place at the time. You know, somebody working in a factory making $10 an hour, whatever it is, they really had to think twice about how many kids they were going to be able to have because they couldn't support them all. But we had a situation where government made it possible for people who wanted to game the system to basically have more children. And, you know, it was really interesting. I had somebody telling me about this at one point that said the problem was that when those kids turned 18 and the benefits stopped, then those mothers that had all those kids had nothing left. They didn't have that money keep coming in. And they were in a real bind at that point. But during those childbearing years, there was no real incentive to stop having more children. And I just see, you know, playing the system, I think, has been, you know, it's gone on for decades.
Well,
and it's destabilized families is what the problem has been, is that it's destabilized our society because it has destabilized the family. And when you have a family structure that you cannot survive, societies don't survive when the family structure breaks down the way it is in our society today. Societies don't last, and that's the problem.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a break, and when I come back, I'm going to be bringing on another gentleman. His name is James Rodriguez. He is the CEO and president of Fathers and Family Coalition of America, Incorporated, and he's going to join the dialogue also. So I want everyone to just inhale and breathe light, and we're coming right back in 60 seconds.
Green Life Radio is a grassroots radio show offering a voice to everyday people. It is without a doubt that this service is a pleasure for we at Green Life to provide. However, this service comes at a cost. For us to continue to provide this valuable outlet to the community, we need your support. Join us as we raise funds to keep Green Life Radio streaming while we provide assistance to Public School 161 in Brooklyn, New York. 15% of all funds raised will go towards providing school supplies to the students of this necessary and vital educational institution. You can find more information about our fundraiser on the web at brilife.evenbright.com. That's brilife.evenbright.com.
And good evening, and we're back, and you've reached the Bree Life Radio Show, and we're talking tonight, part two of our discussion, child custody and child support issues, whether it's a friend or foe. Tonight we're being joined with my co-host, Alex W. Lee, and our guest panelist tonight is Michael McCormick, General Parker, and we're bringing on James Rodriguez right now. James, are you there? Hi,
yes,
good evening.
I am.
Bree Life Radio Show. And I know you've been listening because I could tell that you've been in the queue. I want to thank you for...
I'm in the middle of the desert.
I got a message that you were going to be driving through. You're coming from Arizona.
Yes.
So, could you tell us a little bit about your organization and what you do?
Well, first, I haven't spoken to Ms. McCormick in a couple of years. We had a colleague, mutual colleague, and she came out and presented at our national conference that we host every year. But so it's good to hear his voice. Fathers and Families Coalition of America started off doing direct services for mothers and fathers that were in the TANF system right when welfare reform transitioned from AFDC. In 1996, in fact, we were the first of eight state programs to operate on TANF dollars prior to existing types of fatherhood programs that are funded through that type of system or any public funds. But over time, we transitioned from direct services into professional development, capacity building, some research, policy development, and helping colleagues develop culturally competent programs throughout not just the United States, but our commonwealths, and we developed a membership base and an affiliate base. Now, I'm honored that there are 58 affiliates throughout the United States, one for the entire nation of Australia and one for the island of Jamaica. And we've got one that we're developing in Uganda, and two providences in Canada. So the issues to make children a priority are international, and everyone on this call understands that that should be the priority, not just father's rights or mother's rights, really for the children.
Well, we want to welcome you to the Bree Life Radio Show. I'm glad that you had the opportunity to get my note and want to participate. We're going to come right back to you, James. General, do you have any updates for us, anything that you've been working on in the last 2 weeks? And then also what I want to discuss is there is a meeting that's going to be taking place in D.C. I think if Michael could give us some information about that a little later. But, General, do you have any updates for us? I know there's a few things that you told me that you were working on. Have you had any progress in the last couple of weeks?
Well, I don't have really much to update on. Things are still in progress. We're still waiting for our bill, the Parental Visitation Interference Bill. It's called the Steve Watkin Bill here in Illinois to be voted on in the full Senate. And we expect that to pass and go on to be signed by the governor. We're still in the process of implementing the Office of Visitation Enforcement. And since then, we found some of the monies that the Health and Human Services provides nationwide for visitation support. But I guess a lot of people don't know about it because a lot of those grants just sit around. But we plan on taking part in receiving some of those monies to help make sure that some of the court orders that the judges hand down in the state of Illinois are actually being enforced from now on. And we can go in and make sure those relationships between the children and their non-custodial parents remain intact and help prevent some of the parental alienation that's been going on.
Right. Now, and this is a question for the entire panel. And in all of your experience with advocating for fathers' rights, what do you see on either side of the table or with either issue, whether it be custody or support? What do you think the biggest issue is, other than we know the breakdown of communication between the two parties? What do you think are between the two issues is the one that is not being addressed the most and is unfair, imbalanced, very biased all the way across the board?
Well, just like I was telling you about the money that sort of support of visitation, there's only $350,000 that they allocate to make sure that visitation is enforced in the state of Illinois. Okay, but there's $136 million to make sure that child support is enforced. So that's a big discrepancy there, Bree. That's a very big discrepancy.
So, wow. Mr. Rodriguez, what would you say? I'm sorry. Rodriguez, what would you say in your experience with dealing with advocating for both fathers and in the issues of child support or child custody issues, is the biggest problem that you find yourself having to support and advocate for?
It's usually a personal value system based. I want to give an example. Today, I got so many calls. I went to go bury my aunt in California, and while I'm there, we got calls and emails that I need to look at the Huffington Post. There's a writer for it, Ms. Stevenson, who wrote an article pretty bad, basically saying that they are now called welfare kings and that fatherhood programs are endangering women and children. So I had a laugh at first, but when you read the depth of her perspective, you could see that she could sway the values that people are saying, hey, fathers really shouldn't be valued in the lives of children, that there's really nothing relevant for them until a particular age. And I don't know if this is true for everyone, but I know personally many judges feel that goes into the child support system, that fathers don't matter, and only sons, and only at a certain age. And so I think that those values, if they're educated upon the realities of the impact of a father in the development of their child in our community, then they would say, hey, you know what? We really got to, if all the possible co-parenting. It'll be great, but 41% of children in the United States don't live with their father. So that means 59% are married, both parents. So the rest are not being co-parented, and you've got to drive more to that. And I think if we as a nation could just say, listen, it's in the best interest of our children that they have co-parenting, well, then, you know, you reduce other things that come along with that, under education, attainment, child well-being is improved, both health, mental health, emotional, social, and then the financial burden as well. A mother gets time to do things for herself. A father gets time for him to do things for himself, but they can still center around the child jointly. And I don't understand why that is too hard for many colleagues to embrace. But I think that is my perspective. And reading that article that was distributed by Annie Stevenson, I think, from the Huffington Post today, it is a reality of many people who believe their position of influence can say, hey, you know what, it really, fathers really don't matter. And that's just a tragedy, because that's not true.
You're absolutely right. That is not true. And I'm a living example of that, but we'll talk more about that later. Michael, what would you say is the biggest phenomenon in both issues, between both issues, dealing with either custody or support, that you feel that your organization or just what you've been exposed to nationally, you feel it, you know, requires the most attention at this point?
I think that James hit it right on the head. I think that our society does not place a correspondingly equal value on the contribution of fathers to child rearing as what it does to mothers. And I think as a result of that particular bias in the society towards the mother's position with respect to the children, that the social support structures have grown up around supporting mothers' relationships with the children, and they do not support fathers' relationships with the children. And it starts right at the court system, where what we know right now from the social science data is that about the worst thing you can do to a kid is to limit its relationship, is to limit that child's relationship with either parent. But we have a society that does not understand that the contribution that a mother makes to a child's development and a contribution that a father makes to a child's development are unique, and they are both vitally critical to producing a well-rounded child. And we continue to pursue, and so we have this entire infrastructure that's geared toward and says to a man, your first priority is to pay money for your offspring, and your relationship comes second. And if we, you know, and we have social structures that are geared around that, child support enforcement being one of them. I mean, think about what General just said. You know, there's $10 million in the federal budget on an annual basis for access type of programming, visitation and access programming. We spend $5.5 billion a year on child support enforcement. If you look at the incentive structure within the Child Support Enforcement Department, the incentive program itself is predicated on not joining mothers and fathers together to co-parent the children. It's predicated on actually removing one of the parents from the equation and then saying, now that you've been removed from the child-rearing equation, it is your responsibility to pay money. James, I'm just going to say to you today, there was a great study that came out of Rutgers that talks about how, particularly in the low-income community, that these court-ordered child support, this court-ordered child support is having an adverse impact on, and we've known this, on family formation, on keeping the father involved, on the informal system of child support that goes on in that particular community. But what we have is a societal mindset today that a father's contribution to beyond the financial is not as valuable to the upbringing of the children as the mother's contribution. And yet we have 50 years now of failed social policies that demonstrate that when we remove the dad from the equation, we put kids at much greater risk. And what I would suggest is that if we change some of these federal incentive programs to incentivize co-parenting, to incentivize shared parenting, and we made the financial incentives that are built into the system flow in the direction of supporting co-parenting and shared parenting, we would see changes overnight in the court system. Because the state is a rational creature, and states are actually responding. They're doing exactly what they're being incentivized to do by the federal dollars that are flowing into the states these days. And, you know, we look at for instance, you know, James, and, you know, the $75 million that were put into fatherhood programs this year, $75 million is less than 2% of the $5.5 billion that we spend on support enforcement. Yet I will tell you unequivocally, and the research supports this, that a father's presence in a child's life is much more important than the paycheck will ever be. Much more important.
You're absolutely right. I want to speak to that for a moment, and then I want to turn it over to Alex. In my own personal situation, I just want to say you become, you know, when we talk about being a child of parents, or when we talk about being a parent of a child or children, I have grown up to know one thing is certain, but it can also be changed too, and that is you become what you see. So if you have two parents that are always at odds with one another, you are teaching your child or your children to become dysfunctional individuals who will not know how to communicate when they become adults. And that also filters into other behaviors that will start a whole nother gambit of issues that society always has to wind up dealing with. We can talk about prison. We could talk about domestic violence. We could talk about a myriad of issues that just from this one child's experience of having to be present to see two parents who don't have the ability to communicate, what they can turn into. Now, that's of course that's the worst case scenario. But when you're looking at children over the last 30, 40 year period of who these people are turning into, you gotta wonder who they came from and what was going on in their houses. So that's something that you want to think about when you're not able to communicate with your ex-wife or the mother of your child or children, or you want to deal with your ex-husband or the father of your child or your children. You have to put your children first, because if you don't, you'll be dealing with bigger problems down the line. Also, I want to just say personally for myself, shared custody, when there is good communication, or at least amicable communication between the parents, it's a win-win situation. It is a situation that is beneficial to the child. I am in a shared custody situation with my son and my ex-husband, and I'm very glad that my son has the best of both worlds. My son primarily lives with his father full time, but I get all the vacation time. And the reason why my son lives with his father now is because he's a teenager. He's 15 years old, and he needs to be with his dad. And he's doing well being with his father. So, you know, there comes a time when you have to let go and do what's in the best interest of your child or your children. So that's my two cents tonight that I want to infuse into the dialogue, because I don't feel that I don't think that I got a chance to really share that with our audience last week. And, you know, like since I said that I had received a few phone calls and text messages and emails that it seemed as though I was being biased towards women, I am a woman, very much so, walking in the spirit and this frame. And I've been through the worst of it and the best of it and all points in between. So I'm not pro or con anyone. I care about the children. I say, damn the parents. Let's think about these kids, you know? So that's where I am. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Alex, because since we're talking about child support, I know that there's some things that is going on in your world, and let's have an opportunity to bring that to the discussion and see, you know, share that with the audience, share that with the panel, and see, you know, what can be done, what kind of advocating can be done.
Yeah, let me address something that Mr. Rodriguez said as well as the general said, and I believe Mike said it as well. There's so much money, I believe the quote was $5.5 million toward enforcement and only $10
billion
toward custody and visitation issues. And let me say this, to us, to the common citizen, to people that's fighting this, okay, that's a very bad issue for us. You know, that doesn't sit well with us. It doesn't taste right with us. Whether economically, personally, professionally, or whatever. But let me just say that to the powers that be, this is an economic windfall, snowball for them. And let me tell you why. Because they've already tested, assessed these situations. And when they found out that when you pull specifically a father out of a son's life, they know that the percentage of that child moving toward a criminal element, okay? When they move toward a criminal element, it's economically feasible because you keep lawyers employed, you keep judges employed, okay? You need more police, you keep police employed, okay? So that's basic economics, okay? Then once they're in the legal system and they're going through this and the courts are making money, now they're in prison. And the prisons are making money, which is why they open more prisons than schools. And it costs thousands of dollars. I believe the last number was $75,000 a year to house one criminal. Okay? Then you have contracts in prison. Who give the toilet paper? Who takes care of the pay phones? Who takes care of the foods? The silverware? The uniforms? All these kinds. This is a business we're talking about. And it starts from the top. Okay, they understand exactly what's going on. If we remove this man out of the child's life or this parent out of the child's life, the child is going to go in this direction 7 times or 8 times out of 10. They've done the numbers already. Okay, and the parent that is the custodial parent, which typically and most times is the mother, don't understand they're being used as a pawn because their interest is being met. They go to court and they get favoritism. They could run rapid with false allegations and false this or false that and get slaps on the wrist or no slap at all because they're being used as pawns in this higher scheme because everybody's making money based off a father or a non-custodial parent who can't see the child but is required to spend money. There's an economic tunnel going on here. And it's going right up through, right up into the prisons. Okay? Now, the average person out there may say, "One man, Alex, it sounds, he's talking crazy." Just look around you. Anytime you have a society that's opening more prisons than schools, it tells you where their value system is. Ask yourself those same questions.
Well, you know, Alex, I would tend to I think you're just hitting the nail right on the head. You know, it was through child support enforcement that debtor's prison was reintroduced into the United States. And on any given day in this country, you have 25,000 people that are locked up whose crime is that they cannot afford to pay their child support. And it's not because they don't want to pay. It's because they're not employed. mean, the second greatest cause of non-payment of child support in the United States today is lack of employment. And debtor's prison was outlawed in the United States in the 1830s. And it came back into the United States with the advent of the modern child support system, where we don't call it debtor's prison. We call it being in contempt of court for not paying your support order. But the bottom line is that for 25,000 people every day, they're sitting in jail because they simply cannot afford to pay what they have been ordered to pay. And at every point in the process, if you're paying your child support, there is revenue being generated from the federal government to the state for that particular process. But if you're not paying and you're sitting in a lockup somewhere for not being able to pay, there is money changing hands for that as well. You're absolutely right. And it is an atrocious thing to see that we are locking up people for being too poor to pay this court-ordered child support, when most of those people never really wanted to be kicked out of their child's life in the first place. And if you want to get to the really heinous cases, you start to look at guys like Frank Hatley, who spent a year in an Atlanta jail for not paying support for a child that he was not even related to. And you've got those people sitting in jail. I've got a friend named Carl LeBove, who's one of the most well-known comedians in the country, who is $200,000 in arrears for child support for a child that the DNA has shown is not his. And when we took that case into court to see if we could get relief for him, the judge said, sorry, social policy trumps biology. Now, guess what? The daughter, the girl that Carl has to pay child support, her father is a comedian who's dead now, but he's a comedian that was known by the name of Sam Kinison. Sam Kinison is a hugely famous comedian. You Google him, you're going to see him. He was known as the screaming comic. And my buddy Carl is on the hook for $200,000 in past due child support, and it has ruined Carl's life for Sam Kinison's kid. And when he presented the DNA evidence to the court that the child was not his, the court said, too bad, too bad. This is the problem. And that's not the exception. That happens all the time. And it is the desire for the money that flows around this. Now, let's imagine if we actually paid an incentive to the states every time there was an award that said that if these kids aren't going to grow up under the same roof with both of their parents, that they will spend at least 40% of their time with each of their parents, and if the court will make that order, we'll give the court $100 for every time they make that order, then tomorrow I will tell you that all over this nation, both dads and moms, but particularly dads, there are 3 million non-custodial mothers in this country who are in the same boat. But what you would see is that all of a sudden we'd have kids spending 40% or more time with both of their parents, because that's the way the state would make their money. The way the state makes its money today is when that parent is separated from that child. That's when the money starts to flow. And people know this, you know. It's no secret how the system works. The terrible thing that we see is that there are some states where you can get a whole lot of time with your kid, but you still pay 100% of the support. And I want to say, Bree, just in terms of positive legislation, get this. A week and a half ago, in Minnesota, thanks to the work of a wonderful woman by the name of Molly Olson, who heads up our affiliate there, the Center for Parental Responsibility, we got both chambers of the legislature, the House and the Senate, to pass a minimum 35% timeshare for both parents in the event of divorce, which means that children will be able to spend 129 overnights a year with their dads. That's in the statute. And we've got people in Minnesota who are calling the governor, who are asking him to veto that legislation because they don't want kids to spend 129 overnights a year with their dad. What's wrong with our nation when we get people out of the domestic violence industry and when we get the bar associations and the attorneys calling the governor's office saying, veto this legislation, we don't think children should have a full relationship with both parents. And folks who are listening to this tonight, understand that that is what we are fighting in legislature after legislature after legislature around the country, because the people who are against this don't want to see their revenue streams altered.
And that's what I was going to say, Mike.
In any form.
That's what I was going to say, Mike. They're calling because you're messing with their cut of the money. That's why they're calling.
That's
right. Was it Carol or James that wanted to say something?
So, you know, we get a lot of calls all over the country. And, you know, I was fortunate to have Lone Fathers Association of Australia come join us this year as an affiliate, and it's not just here, it's all over the world. And I think he said that even though you're allowed joint custody in Australia, less than 1% gets that benefit, and the suicidal rate is up high, and it is true. So I think about 85% will attempt or consider it, and then there are the success rates. So it destroys the fabric. So not only I'm going to share something. When I was in the military, my ex-wife walked away. We were really young. And I had two children that I came home to, and there was nothing there. Just me and my two kids, and literally a wiped out house. And I had full custody, and I had to pay child support. And I didn't know anything about it. I was in the armed forces, and I had to pay to the state. We weren't on public assistance, and they couldn't find her. And I didn't get my money back. So, you know, but it didn't stop me. But we get so many calls like that. And just on a logical perspective, after a period of time, I guess if I didn't have the fire to fight, I would have given in. But and that's what happens with a lot of fathers. They'll just say, you know what? Number one, it's draining my pocketbook. Two, I just feel like I cannot win. And it's because it's systemic. You're going up against a system that says they're going to try to do 100% pass-through. Listen, I like Vicky Tureski, the commissioner of child support. I've spent time with her. I've had dinner with her, and I think she's a wonderful person. I like Stephen Golightly, the Los Angeles County child support director. And there's some great directors out there. But systemically, as a whole, until the U.S. Senate and the U.S. Congress come down and say everything has to change, it won't. Right now, Section 1006 for House Resolution 4970 basically will give a permanent restraining order against Native American fathers if they're going through a divorce or if there's an allegation of some form of abuse, that they are permanently barred access to their kids. And a lot of people don't realize it because we don't understand policy. And I'm glad that Michael brought that up. And if that passes through, you know, it's just a stepping stone for the next thing, the next thing, and the next thing. And so that's why there has to be greater awareness, and it starts with the legislators. There's only a handful. Mike, maybe you know a few. McDermott from Washington and Danny K. Davis are probably it from Illinois that are really strong and not wavering that they need to do something more about fatherhood. And I can't think of anyone else except for those two on a consistent basis. There are some others that they'll tag along, or maybe around Father's Day it looks good for a Photoshop opportunity. Even the National Responsible Fatherhood Clearinghouse that we have is a joke. And so that's why it's a dog and pony show, what we used to call in the military. It's for federal grantees, which Mike mentioned, $75 million. The federal government didn't even disperse $75 million. They only dispersed $50 million. They said that the clearinghouse, evaluation, and research, and overhead administrative costs for ACF required the other $25 million. So they didn't even get that money into the community, which could help low-income or unemployed or recently underemployed fathers
find a job, so they could pay child support if that's the case. So I think, there's a lot of things that we talked about, values, but one thing that must happen is you have to have better policymakers who are going to really take it serious, and it's the Senate and the Congress, and they have to be held accountable.
Right. Well, what we're going to do now, we're going to take a minute break, and when we come back, there are some callers that are very eager to this issue, the child support and child custody, whether it's friend or foe. We'll be back in a moment.
It's the Real Life Show.
You gotta turn on.
When Real Life Show.
You gotta turn on.
It's the Real Life Show.
You gotta turn her on.
The Real Life,
the Real Life. You gotta turn her on.
It's the Real Life Show.
You gotta turn her on.
When Real Life Show.
You gotta turn her on.
It's the Real Life Show.
You gotta turn her on. The Real Life, the Real Life. You gotta turn her on.
Tune in Wednesday and Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, for Real Talk about Real Life. Inhale and breathe light. It's the Breathe Life Radio Show on blogtalkradio.com/BRILIFE.
It's the Breathe Life Show.
Breathe light. Welcome back to the Breathe Life.
And we're breathing light. It's the Breathe Life Radio Show, where tonight we're talking about part two, child support and child custody issues, whether it's friend or foe. And from what I'm hearing, is a lot of foe. And tonight we're being joined by my co-hosts, Alex W. Lee, James Rodriguez, General Parker, and Michael McCormick. And what I'm going to do in our second hour, or our last 50 minutes of the show, I'm going to open up the phone lines because, like I said, there are a lot of people who had questions and concerns and just things that they wanted to put out there in the atmosphere. So I'm going to take the first caller from 708-997. Good evening.
Hi, guys. Thanks for emailing me about the show. I talked to my name is Jim, and I talk. I'm sorry.
Your name again is?
It's Jim.
And you're calling from where?
I'm in Indianapolis right now.
Okay, great.
I talked to Mike a long time ago. I'm in my 27th year of a divorce with a daughter that was abducted in 1985. In Illinois, has some draconian laws about they treat child support as a capital crime. There's no statute of limitations. And in those 20 years, the courts and the clerk have lost records. They've lost abatement papers. They've lost a lot of things. And now, because there's a couple of bottom feeder type of collection agencies getting in on this with attorneys willing to play the game, they band together. They absolutely do things that are unscrupulous. They find a judge that will work with them, and they go back for these supports, for child support that was after the abduction of a child and a secretion of a child for 12 years, and they're getting away with this for 20 years of interest and attorney's fees. I owed like $5,000 when my daughter was abducted. That was it. They turned it into almost $86,000.
Oh, my.
And then I'm still estranged with my daughter, and she's 31 years old. I'm still in court over it. I'm with a judge that has no idea what's going on, except she's completely biased. She's turned off the court reporter. She's threatened my family to pay if I can't. And they get away with this in Illinois. And it's unbelievable. And I've got it all documented. It went before the Judicial Inquiry Board. The investigator even told me he never, after his investigation, this was rock solid, and they still did nothing to the judge because she's politically connected, and her husband was indicted in 91 for gate post payrolling in Chicago.
Oh.
So you got the collection agencies and the courts in Illinois just destroying men's lives. Even 27 years after the fact, after an abduction and secretion, moving to another state for over 12 years.
Wow. If you have a question tonight for anyone on the panel.
I would love to see them get the legislators and get some rid of some of these draconian laws like no statute of limitations. My wife was ordered by the courts when they found her twice to return to Illinois, and she never did. She literally thumbed her nose to the courts, and 20 years later, 26 years later, they're giving her relief even though her hands were unclean from 12 years earlier. So if they could change some of these laws, we'd have more of a chance.
Can I say something?
Yeah, please. I can shut up. Go ahead.
In Illinois, and I wish it was in every single state, but this is going to be the issue. You have a domestic violence, domestic relations coalitions. If they could just realize, or national organizations for women, if they could just realize that it's really not an attack against mothers, because I'm glad that Mike brought up there are a growing number of single-parent households headed by fathers only. Right now it's 27%, and it's growing at higher rates than single-mother-headed adults. But in Illinois, they've got the Illinois Council on Responsible Fatherhood, and I would suggest that you get connected to that council throughout the governor's office. It's been made into law, so it can't be changed unless the Senate and the House for Illinois changes it along with a signage from a new governor. But every state should have that. And in one way, it protects the rights of children. Well, it does protect the rights of children. But even if you have that council, then it has to be it's only as good as those who have the position of influence, such as judges. And I know that because we helped a young man, had two children, loved his kids, moved to another state, lost his job, was barely paying child support, maybe one every 3-4 months, couldn't fly back to see his kids for a year and a half. In the meantime, she remarried and did a paternity release so that the new husband could adopt the kids. They basically cut. This guy flew back to the state of Pennsylvania and tried to fight and said, listen, I love my kids. I call. I just don't have the money. I'm broke. And you know what? I cannot believe it, but the judge said, too bad, and you're no longer the father, even though, you know, these kids are half black and half white, and the mother is white, and she married a white father. And I'm saying, what happens when the kids look in the mirror? And then also, they're still his kids. What, even if you change that, but that happens so often, and it's sad that it's just taking 27 years. But, yeah. And that's why the policy and the legislators are important. And we need to go back to the Illinois Council Response Father. I don't know if Mike, through his coalitions, which is different than ours, if he has any suggestions as well of who to go to put pressure on.
I talked to both of those guys, and they've been very, very helpful. But the only thing is, Illinois, you know, and I don't mean to appear myopic, but Illinois is the only court experience I've had. And they promised to have court reporters removed and then go to a recorded system with video and audio. These family court judges are getting away with murder in Illinois, what they're doing to these families.
All over
the country. You can't afford a court reporter. Well, I know, but I'm just experiencing Illinois, and I saw the guys from Illinois going to be on tonight. And if it's happened here, it's got to be happening elsewhere. But we've got – what do we do? I mean, it's just been so tough. And I'm still in court over this, 26 years later.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm
going to let General comment, and I want to just thank you for calling in. And after General comments, we're going to go to another caller.
Okay,
yeah,
I'll
hang up
and listen.
Thank you all.
I can, because if I don't, we won't be able to get to a lot of questions tonight. But I understand what you're saying, James, and there is a father, Illinois Council of Fatherhood, but they mostly deal with the Responsible Fatherhood movement, and that movement basically states that men don't know how to be fathers, and we want to teach you how to be a father, when that's not really the case. We got guys here who know how to be fathers, who pay their child support and do everything that they want to do. And like Mike said, never wanted to be out of their child's life in the first place. It's the way that the court systems are set up, and they were taken out of the child's life, and they haven't been given a chance. And you are right about one thing. It's so politically connected here because we tried to get a visitation interference bill passed here because a young man got killed because of domestic violence by his ex and her family. But because it was a female who committed to domestic violence, the Domestic Violence Coalition decided to decide with the perpetrator this time instead of the victim of domestic violence, okay? And they opposed the bill for no other reason. It was because we as a group were the ones were backing the bill and we were behind it, you know, and they didn't want any bills coming through that supported any fatherhood initiatives or any men whatsoever. And that was crazy because they kept asking, well, you're against the bill, but why? You know, they never came up with a good reason. So until we get that change, and like Mike said before, change the incentives, before bad behavior, none of this stuff is going to change.
Absolutely. Well, thank you guys for your time. Keep it up. We'll make headway eventually one of these days. Take care.
Well, good. I'm good. You continue to listen, and we're going to go to another caller. The next caller we're going to pick up is from 815.
650-815-690. Hey, good evening. Good evening.
Good
panel.
Evening. Your name is?
My name is Richard Thomas. I'm a nurse in the Joliet, Illinois area, right below Chicago.
Okay.
And first of all, I'd like to say I absolutely applaud each and every one of your panel members as well as yourself for bringing up this issue. And I know. At least two of the members of the panel, and they are absolutely warriors for all that is right. And we need more people like them. Go ahead.
And your question tonight is?
Second of all, like I said, I'm a nurse, and I would really like to highlight and echo a lot of the sentiments I heard tonight. I see firsthand, as a nurse who has a lot of adolescent and adult psychiatric experience, I see firsthand the havoc that is wreaked by family law courts. It's wrong. It's not just wrong, but it's really wrong. It's not just a pattern. It's an epidemic.
Yes, and it's
every day. It's in every county. It's in every state. It has a ripple effect throughout our society. And the response that the medical field is having, tragically, is that we are bombarding our children with psychotropic medications, most of which is totally unneeded. I see this on a daily basis as a nurse, and it is tragic. We need to get back to both mothers and fathers having substantial time, guaranteed time that children don't have to worry about being having target painted on their chest for manipulation, et cetera. We need that guaranteed time with both parents with the child. And I know your panel is working hard in that direction, and I just want to highlight and echo from my professional experience, et cetera. This is needed now more than ever. And fathers are treated as Homer Simpson buffoons who need to be taught how to be fathers, need to be dragged towards fatherhood, and that's simply not the case for the vast majority. Irresponsibility has no gender. Irresponsibility runs even through all genders, throughout cultures, et cetera, and so forth. So those are my comments. Perhaps the panel... To remedy situations.
Okay, well, we want to thank you very much for supporting the show, and I hope that you continue to listen because this
sure.
is not this is definitely not going to be because the problem is so. Is so wide and so broad, and what's so unusual to me is that there's no umbrella for the type of law that exists for family court issues. I mean, we're all human beings, and there are children that have to be taken into consideration, and there are different laws for different states. I just don't understand why it is that way, but, you know, hopefully with a lot of hard work from everyone on both sides of the table, both the mother and the father, we need to lobby
what?
For some reform. So
hey,
I want to calling and continue to listen. Don't hang up. Yes, I heard someone call my name.
This is Alex.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something to what the gentleman said that just called, and he said something very poignant. He said, irresponsibility has no gender. And I think that is so crucial because the courts assume that the mother makes the better parent all the time. And that's just not true. I mean, I know so many situations where mothers that have children and the father's out living separate paying support, they got countless men running in and out of the house, they're dating and so forth. What kind of image is that for a child, particularly a son, to see his mother dating countless men, okay, for money, for companionship, for whatever the case is, while his father's living outside the house paying support to this woman?
Right.
Isn't that irresponsibility?
Can I respond to that?
Sure.
Sure. I would like to just highlight and I go, yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's so bad. Most people don't understand this, but a biological parent, typically the father, can be charged for daycare. A parent, a biological parent, doesn't even have the right of first refusal. Not in this state of Illinois. And I don't know of any other state where they have the right of first refusal. You would think that if a mother is going to work or school, et cetera, that the first opportunity to rear that child and take care of that child is the father. But no.
You're absolutely right. And just to close out this portion of the topic, but I know here in New York I have a friend back in November who received a child support, a petition for child support and custody, and it was on the basis that he and his ex-girlfriend were at odds with one another because she wanted to put her son in daycare, and it was going to cost an additional $1,200 a month on top of what he already paid.
Mm-hmm.
Child support, and he made, as a network engineer, he was making about $110,000 with, I think, 17% to 19% of that goes to child support, so you could do the math on that. You know how much out every month. But now she's petitioning for more money on the basis that she has to pay $1,200 for child care now.
The bottom line is you can be forced to pay for your child to be raised by a series of strangers.
Right.
Exactly. Well, I want to thank you, and we're going to go to another caller. Please continue to hold on and listen to the rest of the show. Again, thank you so much.
Hey, Bree, this is General. What happened to all those females that were going to call in?
I'm about to pick up one right now from 540-323. 540-323. Peace and blessings is the Bree Life Radio Show.
And hi, Bree.
You know,
this is Marquisha.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You're being joined tonight by our guest panelist, who is General Parker in Illinois, Michael McCormick in Washington, D.C., you also have James Rodriguez, who is, I believe he's from the Bronx, but lives in Arizona, or that might be in reverse. I'm not sure. Correct me if I'm wrong. And Alex W. Leith, who is my co-host tonight. Gentlemen.
Hi, Alex and everybody.
Extra estrogen on the line. So,
okay.
Marquisha, please tell us tonight what's on your mind about this topic of child support and child custody.
Well, I'll basically say that, honestly, it goes back to, let's go back, and I have to say, even as a woman, a lot of times I do fault the woman in a lot of cases where we do have the authority a lot of times to not get involved, because we know as sure as you're able to have sex, anything can happen. And out here, you know, getting involved in different relationships, you can get, you know, STDs, babies, whatever. But when a child comes into a relationship that is not based upon a marriage, if the party is not able to conduct themselves where they can handle the separation but still be parents, that's where a lot of the issues come in, where it not only brings a lot of chaos to the child, whether you see it or not, but at the same time, it is difficult for the parents. And there are certain cases where I do feel that sometimes the child support is a lot on the man. But then again, I say this, if the mother does have full custody of the child, or if it's joint custody, with the mother basically having the child at all times, sending the child to school, taking the child to a doctor's appointment, or whatever may come up, and she's the one that's doing all of those things, there are a lot of men that feel like, when I pay the child support, that is enough. I shouldn't have to do the other things, daycare. I shouldn't have to do Christmas, birthdays. Use the money I give you, basically, to take care of those things. And I feel like it should just be a together thing. And we know sometimes it can be hard, but it's not about the adult. It's about the child. But a lot of times it's hard for people to move forward and ignore the fact, okay, I'm not involved with you anymore, but I'm going to be there for my child. So I do fall, like I said, because the women, we do have that authority to just not get involved, you know, unless it's a case where it's a rape situation or something, you know, to that nature. But then I still say that there are fathers out here that do not do what they are supposed to do. And I've seen it, you know, in mothers as well, but I do see a lot of fathers that don't understand it's not about the money. If you would take the time and be in the child's life, then there is a lot of times where things can be negotiated and things can work out on a better path.
Okay. And I want anyone to jump in on what Markeisha has said. What is your feelings about that? We'll start with Mike.
Well, I think that what you're seeing here, and that is, I think that's accurate what she's saying, that there are parents that will say, I'm giving you the money, you take care of all those other things. I would say, unfortunately for those parents, they're missing out on a tremendous amount of the joy that goes into raising children, because money doesn't make up for relationship. Whether you're actually paying it or whether you're actually not paying it, you still want that level of relationship there. And, you know, it's really interesting because you talk to kids and you say, well, you know, what was your best memory of your dad growing up, or what was your best? And invariably, the kids are going to tell you. I'll just give you an example. A friend of mine one time, he took his kid to the Super Bowl, and, you know, they were in the owner's box, and they were watching the game, and, you know, I was talking to this guy, and he says, yeah, you know, later on, a couple of years down the road, I asked my son what was his greatest memory growing up as a kid, and his kid said, you know, Dad, you remember when we were sitting on the curb outside eating barbecue burgers and just sitting on the curb, kicking back, eating barbecue? And that was the kid's greatest memory. And kids, what they want is your time. They're not looking for your money. And what we need to teach parents is that the investment that you make in your kids is not the money that you give them, it's the time that you give them. It's the things that you do with them. It's how you're an everyday part of their life. And we've got to create an environment here that allows both parents to be fully engaged in the lives of their kids, not with money as the priority, but with relationship as the priority. And I'm just going to say, as far as what your caller just had to say, you know, the fact we've got to face the fact, and the fact is that there are probably 15% of parents out there that never had any business being parents in the first place. And she alluded to that. You know, people sleep together, they connect, and the child is the result of that. Well, they need to grow up as soon as that is the case. They need to say, hey, guess what? You know, we've actually created another life. Now we've got to make sure that our focus is that child,
not all of these other things. We call that growing up and taking responsibility for your actions. We need to have more people that are willing to do that. We've created in some communities environments where people don't ever grow up and take that responsibility. But I'll tell you one of the things that I think is really unfortunate here is that more than any other time in our history, and maybe not more than, but significantly at this point, is that we have children having children today. We shouldn't have 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds and 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds having babies. They're not ready for that. And that's a problem that comes, again, right down from the top in terms of what are we teaching our children is okay in our society. And it breaks my heart. I see this in the African-American community in particular, where, you know, study after study tells us that people want to be married, that girls are being asked, what's your goal? And they say, well, I want to be married. I want to be in a married relationship. I want to have a family. And then when they're asked, do you think it will ever happen for you? And they say, no, I don't think it will. I think it's a dream. It's something that I want to happen, but I can't ever see it for my own life. And that, to me, that sums up in a nutshell the problem that we have and how we're not addressing this with the emphasis on, on the funds as opposed to the relationship. And what are we teaching? We have, you know, child support enforcement, you know, educating in the schools now is some things that are just, you know, make no sense whatsoever. Like, you know, don't worry, if you get pregnant, then the guy's going to pay. I've got to tell you, I mean, I used to do some work with Teresa Kaiser, who many years ago was the head of child support enforcement for the state of Maryland. And I think we need to be educating these children in our schools. Look what happens if you have children out of wedlock. Look what's going to happen. I think a lot of these guys, they don't understand that if you have one kid while you're in high school, you can forget about your college opportunity. And if you have two kids while you're in high school, you can forget about a whole lot of the rest of your life because you're going to be required to support those children. And I just think a lot of guys out there, they just don't get it. I'd love to come in with a program, and in fact, I've applied for grant money to bring just a straight talk program in to guys in the school and say, look what's going on. Let me bring your examples to you, right? And here, let me do this. People who are listening to this want to see the child support and the relationship thing in a nutshell, go to facebook.com/SaveTheTurnips. And watch the video blog on there. Save the Turnips is a campaign of our organization. It's directed at child support. Change the impression about poor people who can't pay support because they're called turnips. You can't get blood from a turnip, right? I don't think the government ought to be calling poor people turnips, but they do. Anyway, having said that, go take a look at facebook.com/SaveTheTurnips and watch the video there. You want to see it? Look what's happened to Terrell Owens. Terrell Owens is ordered to pay $45,000 a month in child support, and that's $540,000 a year if you want to do the math, and his income is $500,000 a year. Now, here's the guy who admits that he's blown $80 million over the course of his life, but he's got four kids out there that he's supposed to fork over $40,000 a year more than what he makes. And he's supposed to be paying more than $10,000 per month per kid. This tells you how far out of whack the system is. When Dr. Phil had him on his show a week and a half ago, he looked at the mothers and he said, you know what, work with this guy so he stays a part of his kids' lives, because if he's not, when they grow up and they learn that you as the mom pushed that dad away, they're going to come to resent you. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why it takes $10,000 a month to raise any kid. But the fact of the matter is, that is exactly right there. Watch what you're doing, Mom, because if you're pushing Dad away, those kids will grow up and they'll get smart about that, and then you'll pay the price for it. And we don't need that.
What we need is we need people working together to raise their children, and we need a system that supports the full engagement of both parents. And James, I hear what you're saying about Vicky Turetsky. My concern is, in terms of what I've seen and what I'm concerned about with child support enforcement getting involved in access and visitation issues in this country, is that fathers will get the minimum amount of time with their children that results in them paying the maximum amount of money, that we will find the balance where if we give dad this X amount of baseline, that's the point at which he'll be inclined to pay the most money. And the fact
well,
of the
that,
matter
that
is,
was a,
is that
you know, excuse
is that
me for a moment.
Know, what we know,
that was a perfect segue because I actually wanted to ask James next, what did he think about what Markeisha just said? But before I ask him to answer or respond to what she just said, I just want to read something that one of our chat room listeners have posted. It says, Texas has a standard possession order that specifies 25% access / possession for the non-custodial parent. And they have an extended standard possession order which allows 40% access / possession. Why not offer an equal standard possession order? I exercise every single opportunity that I get parenting time, 40%, and I'm ordered to pay the same as someone who never sees their child. This makes no sense. So I'm going to segue over to James, and if you could just respond to what Markeisha said, and then we'll go from there.
Well, as I was listening intently, I just think that, you know, most fathers don't want to walk away. You know, mothers and fathers, unfortunately, show their immaturity level using children as a pawn, and it's usually because they got hurt and because one person, or maybe sometimes both, don't want to stay in the relationship, so the pawn, unfortunately, is the child. I think that, you know, for the fathers that say, hey, you know, I really don't want to be around, I'm not going to be responsible, Mike was right, it's the greatest thing you'll ever do in your life, have a child. I'm getting engaged on Saturday, and I told my fiance, she's got a beautiful little two-year-old son, she doesn't like her father that much, and I laughed because he text messages his son. And I'm like, what kind of bonding? And I said, you know what? You can't stay upset. You got to have this father involved. She goes, well, you'll be involved. I said, but I'm not his father. And he's going to have questions one day. And you know what? You just keep giving the door of opportunity. Don't slam it shut. Let him come through it. Because even if he never does, you can never, ever be questioned about your desire to have a healthier father, so your child will be healthier. And then that's what I think about. Now on, you know, the Texas chat, video chat, or Vicky Turetsky, I personally think child support enforcement should just be that, and that the federal laws should just mandate every state, every county, that unless there's physical harm to that child, that both parents get 50-50% custody. Nothing less.
Excellent.
And you start right there and you end right there, unless there's a proof of domestic violence or child abuse or child endangerment. And now, if they have to live in different states, then you're going to have to come up with a parent visitation plan, and it might be father or mother gets the child during the summer or the winter vacations and spring vacations. But if you start right there and say, this is it, and this is where we end, right there, it'll take a leave. Now, I'm going to have to mandate these judges that get reelected because no one knows how to read if a judge is an appropriate judge or not. I went to court with a father, and I'm going to throw this judge underneath the bus. Stephen A. Gerst, he said he didn't believe fathers should have custody of their kids. Now, this guy was raising his kids for 2 years while I was on because the pro tem gave an order, and it finally got to this gentleman, and he just said that. I was like, I cannot believe it. And this came from a male judge, too. So that goes back to what I first said about values. Get the value system out of it and say this is just law. And you can't have the influence of a judge to deviate from law. If it's 50-50, make that the federal law. Make it in every state and county. And someone mentioned about the states, if they don't enact it, penalize them. And just go after the states. They'll do it. And you know what? At the end of the day, in 10 years from now, something like that would happen. I will guarantee you child high school dropout rates will decrease. Early onset of unplanned pregnancies will decrease.
Mm-hmm.
Youth suicides will decrease. Mothers living in poverty will decrease. Children in our county and state systems, because they get adjudicated, will decrease. All the ills that our society's experienced will decrease because you'll have more fathers involved in the child's life. The ones that don't want to, there's nothing you can do about it, but it's the same thing. Can't make a mother be involved. I shared earlier, my oldest kid's mom for 3.5 years, we didn't even know where she was at. I never once said anything bad. All I said is, your mom, when she come back, she's just getting herself better, she'll be a better mom. My kids never really bonded with her and never ever bonded. They're adults. And I know deep in her heart, because we've had a discussion once, that it eats her alive as a mother, as a woman, that her going away for 3 years really, really ate her up alive. And I think it does a lot of men that just don't express it.
Well, you know, as a mother, when my son goes to spend half of the summer with his father, I don't know what to do with myself. That's how much I love and miss my son. So if I can't take 30 days him being away, I can only imagine. And I don't know what the ills of, you know, what has caused her to be away from her children, but, you know, if she's a woman and she's a mother, she is paining, I promise you, you know, and it's something that she lives with all day. She lives with that all day. But I want to go to General and ask him, what did you think about what Markeisha has said?
Well, I guess you were basing things off of her own personal experience. Being around this state, you know, all the time and around the country most of the time, seeing different situations, I got to disagree with her a little bit. And I think Mike, too, could Mike agree with her. But she's right to a point because she's stating some of the situations and circumstances. But I think what she's talking about, you know, you got dads that just want to pay the money, don't want to be involved. I think she's talking about a smaller percentage of dads that do that. A lot of times dads don't really want to be in that situation, but because they didn't go into court with an agreed-upon visitation schedule with the mom, they get relegated to that standard visitation schedule that I was talking about the last time, you know. The judges
go ahead.
Every other weekend, you know, and probably a couple hours through the week on your off week, you know, and you've been changed from being a dad and seeing your kid for 30 days out of the month to now you're more or less like an uncle. uncle with a pen machine, you know, and a lot of guys, and she said something else that was telling that she said, well, the mother has the authority to, you know, what gives her that authority, you know? That's that man's child just as much as it is that mother's child, you know. And what gave her that authority, the judge said, no, you're going to be out of this situation, and we're going to let mom take care of everything, you know. But my movie producer, James Morton, did a documentary on that, and he said more men would be involved if they had unfettered access to their children. But a lot of times the mothers make it so impossible that the man would just rather just go ahead and pay the money and not argue and fight.
Okay. Well, I wanna go to our next caller, and I wanna ask Alex, did you have anything quickly that you wanted to make a comment towards what Markeisha shared with us tonight?
Well, I'll share that after the call. I want the caller again.
Okay.
Markeisha, I want you to continue to, don't hang up, I'm going to put you on hold, continue to listen to the show, and I want to thank you very much for supporting the show and for definitely calling in tonight. We definitely needed to hear from you.
You're welcome, and thank you.
Okay. We're going to take the next caller, but I have a question for the panel, and then we're going to take the next caller because we got about 15 more minutes to the show, and we probably could go over. But here's what I want to ask the panel: if you had a existing court order that specified shared custody, let's say, and then you, because you and your ex are on amicable terms and you're able to communicate and make good decisions based on, you know, on that communication on behalf of your child or your children, and one parent decides that, okay, instead of this shared custody, for a while we're going to try to let the kids go live with you, or they're going to come live with me. Do you feel that it's necessary, especially when you're on amicable terms, to modify the custody order? I want to start with General and ask you, what do you think about that? Do you think it's necessary if you're on amicable terms to modify an order, an existing order?
So I think that comes to a case-by-case basis, you know, and each parent know the dynamics of their relationship and the relationship with the kids. But personally, I think in general, I still believe children need both parents, okay? And they need that interaction with both parents to grow up, to be well-rounded,
right,
and to be active to our society. So,
When I say that, I don't mean in the sense that the children would just go live with the other parent full-time and the not, let's say now the non-custodial parent would not have access. I'm just saying, what do you think about when two people are able to be amicable?
Well, can
and
I say something to that?
When they're able to be amicable, there's no contention, you know, there's no conflict. They're not in the courts. That's something that they worked out, and it's working there with the children, you know.
Right,
but no
what
problem.
I'm saying is that when there's an existing order, see, there are some people that think, that feel that even when there's an existing order, whether or not you're getting along amicably or not, that it's probably in your best interest to modify the order. I just was wanting to know what you thought about that. Alex, did you have something to say?
Let me say this regarding that. If you have a situation that's amicable, and you're in rare air, let me just say that first and foremost, whoever the situation is. If you have a situation that's amicable, I say cancel the visitation order or custody order altogether. Get the courts out of your business. If you're amicable,
you
don't need the courts in your business. You don't need an order. If you're going to respect each other enough and respect the child enough, and the child says, Dad, I feel like seeing Mom this week. Well, go ahead and be with your mother. Mom, I feel like seeing Dad this week. Well, go ahead and be with your dad for this. You know, if you guys can behave like that, we don't need the courts in our business. But too many people, custodial parents, want the courts in their business because they're angry, they're bitter on how the relationship ended, and they want to stick it to the non-custodial parent just based off of those principles alone.
Okay. All right, quickly. Michael, what do you think about that?
The best shared parenting plans are the ones that get signed and get approved by the court, then are put in a drawer and never looked at again. I think if you're going to modify your order significantly or attempt or try to do something else, I don't think it's necessary that you necessarily need to go back to the court to do that. But I think it's a good idea to actually take out a sheet of paper, write down the four or five things that you're going to do differently. Both of you put your name on it and then stick it in the drawer with the agreement so that if it ever goes south, you at least have a document at the time that when things were going well, you can you can take into the court and say, you know, this is what we had agreed to at the time. Unfortunately, we're in a we're in a situation where we're not in agreement at this point. But this is actually memorialize it. You don't have to go to court to memorialize it. Depending upon your comfort level, you can write out 5 or 6 points on a piece of paper, both sign it and date it. If you want a little stronger, write out 5 or 6 points on a sheet of paper, take it down in front of a notary, and both sign it in front of a notary so that you've got, you know, a notarized verification that both of you actually signed the piece of paper. As far as going into court, if you're going to deviate from your agreement, if you've got a good relationship, like I say, the best agreements are the ones that are signed, approved by the courts, put in a drawer, and never looked at again.
Okay. Okay. And James, what do you think?
Well, if your thing's going fine, I wouldn't even modify the order. Just why do you have to go back into court? Only if your intuition says, you know, you want to protect yourself and you want to have something to document the agreement. But really, tell the truth, there really is no need for child support unless someone doesn't want to pay. There's no need for collections. If you have to pay child support directly to the parent. Draft it, put it in the bank, put in a memo. But, someone said get the courts out of your life. I think things out. But I think there's no need to even include them. And from my perspective, look, I've had it two different ways. One, when I was young, real young, and having my kids walk away. Then when I got older, I got primary custody of my 9-year-old daughter, who's in the back seat with me, and I've got to get off the phone so I can call her mom and tell her we're back. But she stays with me the majority of the time, and if she says, "Hey, Dad, I want to hang out with my mom," okay, or she'll call me and say, "Dad, I really want to be with you," and even if it may be quote unquote her mom's day, okay, there's no problem with that. Now, I need to go modify an order to change what's supposed to be happening on paper versus what's in her best interest. So,
okay. Well, I just wanted to put that question out there. We're going to take our next caller from 347.
I appreciate you. I do have to get off.
Oh, no, that's quite all right, James.
Right,
first of all, I want to thank you for calling in last minute. I want to congratulate you on your future nuptials. And
I do want to say something. If you're in Illinois, I know I say Illinois, but if you're there June 12th, we're having an institute at Elmhurst College, and Congressman Danny Davis is going to be there talking about what he would like to see transformed for fatherhood. So you know what? That's a great time for you to go. Just mention my name. You can go sit in on the keynote for free. I know it's at Elmhurst College,
Kmart
Center, and not 500 people, but, you know, but then meet and greet the congressman at 8 o'clock
right.
in the morning. And it's an opportunity for you to get in front of someone who represents Illinois and his constituents and try to share some things that you'd like to see different on the law book. Well, with that, I have to keep going. God bless, and I appreciate everyone. Mike, it was great hearing your voice. It's been about 4 or 5 years.
You too, James. Let's catch up next time you're in town.
All right. Take care, everyone. God bless.
Thank you. Well, we're going to pick up that caller from 347-724. Good evening.
Hey, what's up? Hey, Bree.
Hi,
Ricky.
How are you? Tell us your
All
name
right.
and where you're calling from.
This is Ricky Lee, Alex's brother.
Ricky Lee. How are you?
I'm doing good. I was just sitting here listening to everything. And I applaud everybody for what they're doing, because believe me, I was a victim of the system myself. But let me start by saying this, because I know we're about to run out of time, but let me start by saying this. I am definitely a strong believer in it's more about spending time with your children than about the money. The money should never really be a focus. If parents are doing what they're supposed to do, whatever, it's all about the parents spending time with their children. Now, the young lady called in early and she was saying, you know, fathers don't want to spend time with their children. I think a lot of fathers want to spend time with their children. Most fathers want to spend time with their children, especially this day and time. But But after the child support, they ain't got no money to get over there to spend time with the child. You understand? And me as a strong, and me as someone who was paying a gain on child support, I remember, I mean, earlier with the gentleman speaking about how what his kid remember most was sitting down eating a barbecue burger on the curb. And with me paying the child support I was paying, that's all I had enough for was a barbecue burger in the curb. You understand? So, but what Mike was saying earlier from last show, Brother Mike was saying from last show, he used a term with Frederick Douglass where he said, power conceives nothing without a demand. And Brother Farrakhan said, well, not even power can concede a demand if the demand is coming from a weak people who have lost their testicular fortitude. The problem we're having is we have to remember that the government works for us. We put them people in there. We have to take to the streets. We have to go after the government and make them change these laws. Personally, I'm not even about changing the laws. I'm about tearing it down and rebuilding it. Because changing the laws, they go from this to that, every state is different, that's nonsense. This thing will never be fixed. You have to tear this thing down and rebuild it. And remember that these people work for us. Obama said that when he became president. Remember that we work for y'all. Y'all, they don't work for us. They coming out here begging us for the votes, kissing the babies and sitting up in the churches and stuff when they want your vote. And then when you want to get something changed, you don't have a voice. The only time you have a voice is when you're voting. But you don't have a voice to change nothing. No, we have to get together, take to the streets, and start going after the government to tear this thing down and rebuild it. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Ricky Lee. What does the panel have to say about what Mr. Lee has to say? Wow.
Well, this is Alex, and I'm going to say my brother and I, we're both very passionate about this because we were both victims of it. His children are both grown now. I still have a adolescent child in the system. But I want to respond real quick to Markeisha. We only have a few minutes left. And she said that, you know, a lot of fathers don't want to interact with their children or whatever. We're not defending those guys. You got a lot of trifling fathers who just want to plant a seed and run away. But I will say they are in the minority. Most fathers want to be in their child's life. They want to come by and spend time. They want to take the child out for an ice cream cone or for a burger. What they don't want is they don't want to deal with the mother's bull, beep, and you know what word I'm talking about. Because every time they want to spend time with their own child, they got to deal with that mother's crap because she's angry, she's bitter, she's being vindictive, and they don't want to deal with it. I know me personally, if I send $500-$600 to child support, as soon as I send it, my son calls and says, well, Dad, I need some sneakers. Okay, I just sent $600 to child support. Tell your mother to buy the sneakers. But no, she down at the boot store to get a handbag to match. Okay, now my son needs sneakers, so I got to buy him sneakers now, which is separate from the order. Christmas toys, separate from the order. I don't mind doing that stuff, but I'm sending you money for a specific reason. You're spending it on yourself. Let's not leave that out. Nobody has said that tonight. We know that a great majority of these custodial parents, which most of mothers, spending the money on themselves, is not going to the child, but when the child wants something, call your daddy. Call your daddy. So all
okay,
these...
we're gonna move on because I want to get some more callers in before we have to wrap up the show. We're going to take the next caller from 847-780.
Okay.
Good evening.
Yeah, good evening. This is Ed Foley. I know Mike McCormick in general quite well. I'm part of Illinois Fathers. And
yes, good evening. Thank you for calling.
Good evening. Great show so far. A lot of things to agree about. But I one of the things I wanted to raise was that in the struggle, and, you know, I've heard the passion expressed, but there's going to be equal opposition or greater opposition. That's a well mobilized opposition. And it comes from a not necessarily a bad place, because if you trace this whole story back to the 50s and 60s, and you think about the state of marriage at that time, women were often locked in bad marriages they feared leaving, because on the other side of the divorce or the other side of the separation was poverty and potentially abuse. And rightly, movements got created to support that concept of letting women, wives, who didn't necessarily work and who were economically less strong, needed protection of the system. And a very strong women's movement started to gain momentum, and got very well mobilized and very well funded, probably rightly so. And so through the 50s and 60s and 70s, this momentum got created. And so the legal system started to make it very easy, or maybe too easy possibly, for mothers to leave the conventional marriage. And I know there's other family law courts type of stuff that goes on with non-married parents, etc. But the law, I think, stems from that sort of picture of the 50s and 60s of domestic violence, of men that were really too powerful in their households. And so we are the victims. You know, the sins of the grandfathers and fathers are visited on the sons. To some extent, we, the fathers of today, are the victims of kind of society as was 30, 40 years ago. So what it's led to is that if the court systems become a henchman for the mother, and if you get a common sense mother, she won't use the henchman, she'll work with the father, and it'll be cooperative. As everybody said, that's very few of the cases. But if she is bitter, or if she's angry, or she simply just doesn't want to deal with this guy, look what she's got now. She can walk out knowing that she's financially secure, that she can go to the court and appeal for their mercy and get a really good trench of tax-free money from the father. She doesn't have to deal with the father. If she doesn't want to, I don't need his interference. I want to manage the children. And she can introduce a new man into her home. His income is protected. It doesn't have to be exposed. If the father remarries the new wife, her income can be inspected. So the whole thing is very much driven by making it easier for women who were in bad situations to be able to get a bad marriages. Now it's become almost like a good option to get out and then get rid of the father. He becomes a check only, and you've got the situation where it's become too easy, you're too exploitable. And so what is a noble thing, driven by very good intent, has almost become cancerous. And people like Mike McCormick in general are these you know, battlers to push back this balance to a fair level. And I feel for the judges. I know I had a very bad judge through my divorce, you know, and I've heard of that. But I don't think they're all stupid or all unfair. I think they just have a very hard time picking their way through this. And I think that while I'm very much promoting shared parenting along with the group that we're in, but I can also see the judge's problem in trying to look at this and saying, well, who's to be believed? And how do I pick my way through it, given that society pushes the idea of, particularly the domestic violence lobby, push very hard that if we back off, we're just going to have a situation where a lot of women are going to get beaten up, children are going to do this. And the domestic violence lobby, it's the most noble thing. And what happens is they put their flag on the high ground and they command the highest ground, because nobody wants to see a child or a mother or anybody abused in a domestic situation. But once
I'll give you an example. I know a case where a father petitioned for custody of his children. Not because the mother was negligent, would put her children in harm's way or anything of that nature, but he did it to protect his income. It's not that he wanted to spend more time with his children. He wanted to protect his income. This was a man that was making $120,000 a year, and he knew if she wound up with the joint physical legal custody of the children, 25% in New York would come out of his check, 25% of $120,000 a year. So what he did was he took her to court and battled and got shared custody, not because he wanted to spend more time with his children, but only because he wanted to protect his income. And you know what wound up happening? He remarried, and his children were abused by that woman.
With all due respect, the issue that you've raised is specious. It's a very div argument, but the trouble is it's the other way around.
Here's the part that I needed
to hear. It's more the other way around.
With the judge,
chase the income.
With the judge. I wanted you to hear the component about the judge. How is a judge able to discern what the motives of the parents really are, right? The judge should have, I feel, in my opinion, the judge should have done a little more due diligence in finding out, well, what other court actions are going on between these two people? Because these were two people that weren't married. They were never married. So while the court action for custody was ensuing, this same father went downstairs in the courthouse and went on the next floor and petitioned that the child support be modified so that he didn't have to pay as much, because I think he was paying something like $2,500 a month. $2,500 to $2,700 a month for the two children. So he went downstairs and lobbied to get it reduced on the basis that he wanted shared custody. That's a clear indication. The judge should have seen right through what he was attempting to do. That it wasn't
about the fact that he wanted to spend more time with his children.
To
anybody. That's one story among millions of stories, and it's not true.
That happens. That's not one story, in all fairness.
But that happens a lot.
That's starting to happen more now because men and women who are the non-custodial parents are learning more strategically, and Mike can attest to this. They're strategically learning how to make the system work for them, not so much what's in the best interest of the children.
Well, that's an opinion, but I'd still say that I think that the thing is sharing, and that you have children. If you're parents of goodwill, you share the children, you share the costs equally. And so I think that there should be some money left over for the father or the non-custodial parent to take their 40% of the time or 50% of the time, whichever it is, and be able to afford it. And so, you know, the trouble is with stories of some bad man somewhere is exactly what Mike and General have to work against, because there's always those stories. But the balance of stories are against those horror stories of men. And there's the story of it. So 95% of all cases are mothers who are filing for divorce, who manage to get out and get a check. It's a tax-free check. They can work. And the parent who is less likely to get the children is less likely to file for divorce. So the story, the powerful messages have to be out there to equalize the situation. And we are underfunded. Mike and General and Illinois Fathers, we find it very hard to get the kind of funding that got going in the women's movements through the 60s, 70s, and 80s. They're hugely well funded with full-time professional staff, deep professional staff, that can fight it. When I go to the Child Support Advisory Council, I'm taking time off work to do that. It costs me money and time. I don't get to charge any expenses. But I'm up against a well-funded group of people who are actually on the committee who are being funded by their law firms. And it's just virtually impossible to have equal say in society. And I commend your show for airing these views.
No, it's absolutely necessary. And just so that you know, you're talking to a parent that lobbied for shared custody. And that's exactly what we have. We're amicable. We get along. We're not the greatest of friends, but we love our son. And we knew early on that if we didn't come together and do this in a way that would be beneficial for him, that we were going to wind up having bigger problems down the line. It wasn't easy because, you know, when two people are separating and divorcing, there's a lot of unresolved issues. But when we got past that and we put our son first, we've been able to, for the last 7 years, that's all we've been able to, that's how we've been working. And that's the message, that's a part of what this show for me is about, because the scales are unbalanced. There are biases that are in the system. And I want to tell people that it's okay to, you don't have to love the other parent anymore, but you should always love and put your children first. So that's a part of my message.
Absolutely.
So I want to thank you for calling in. Is there anything that you wanted to say to anyone on the panel?
Well, just great work to Mike McCormack, who stays so cool, is such a fabulous advocate for us. I totally admire what he does. And the general's passion and the way he's driving, particularly for his community, is just it's great, too. So thank you, gentlemen.
Right, yes,
thanks for
absolutely.
The chat.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. We're going to take one more caller. We're going to wrap up the show. And I want to thank everyone that's hung on and that's in the queue and that's also still listening to the show. And of course, at some point in the future, we're going to have a part three to this, but we're going to take our very last caller, and that caller is calling from 630-229, 630-229. Good evening.
Good evening. This is Khalid from Illinois.
How are you?
I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm very well, thanks.
Good. We were talking about, I can go back through my own personal history about, the alienation and the child support and things of that nature. But one of the things that I ran across more recently was how much money Facebook was making. I'm using them as an example. And they don't charge people to use their services. And someone said of Facebook that if you're not paying into it, then you are the product. You are the product that, in other words, your information, your trends, the things that you like, the things that you do, are the product that Facebook is selling to someone somewhere. And so our children, especially in the state of Illinois, are the product that is being used to, being sold to someone somewhere, whether it's the corporations that own the prisons or otherwise. And so one of the things that I ran across more recently was the June 2011 financial report for the judge's retirement fund. And right as of June 2011, they had $1.9 billion available to them as part of their funding structure. Now, it's broken down into different parts, but to me, that's a lot of money for a state's judicial retirement system.
Mm. And that goes back to what Alex, my co-host tonight, was talking about, how there is a state for the government, that the government has in how our family court structure fails. Not succeeds, but fails.
Well, they're succeeding at what they're trying to do, and that's make money.
Exactly. But we, on the other side, our children, are the result of a failing system.
That's true. A system that's designed to fail our children.
Yes.
I was glad I was sitting down when I found that amount that was available to them.
Well, it is staggering. Mike, are you still there?
I am.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to say to Mike tonight or general?
No, just keep up the good work. I'm with you guys.
Well, thank you. We're going to. I mean, it's just when the state comes in and takes people's home or takes people's children, comes into their home and takes their children without cause, that's a very scary society. And frankly, it's not a future I want my kids to inherit. So we're just going to stay at it.
Well, I want to thank the caller for sharing his views and offering his continued support. We're going to wrap up the show now. Michael and General, what did you think about my comment with regards to what I was talking about with a friend of mine who I know for a fact was going through this issue with the non-custodial parent? Unfortunately, yeah, he was a man, and he didn't want to lobby for more time with his children until child support came into play. And this is just a primary example of how manipulation knows no gender, and how men as well as women manipulate the system to avoid from certain responsibilities. What do you think about that, General?
Well, I can only say it like this, Bree. You know, back a couple thousand years ago, there was a guy that walked this earth, and he was perfect in all ways, and he had 12 guys to follow him. And out of them 12 that he handpicked, one of them was the devil, okay? So no matter what situation you get in, there's always going to be somebody that's going to do the wrong thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter how we try to fix this and no matter how we get the laws changed or whatever we do in this fight and this struggle, there's always going to be some people who just ain't going to do right. I don't care what you do, you know. There's going to be some people who want to be lazy. There's going to be some people who want to get out of fulfilling their obligation, whether it be financial or whether it be allowing another person that had their rights to be a parent, you know, in their kid's life. You're always going to have some bad. There's always some bad to go with the good. There's always rain falling on sunny days, you know. But we got to look at what happens most of the time, okay, and for the majority of the time. And that's what we got to deal with. If we know we're going to be lost as a society trying to cater to the 10 to 15%, you know, how we destroy the rest of the 85%.
Okay. Michael, what do you think?
I think that the current system that we have gives people all the clubs that they ever need to beat each other up with, and unfortunately, male or female, it doesn't matter. If somebody is inclined to use them, they will. And that until we change this system, we are just going to get more of the same.
Okay. And Alex, do you want to close out the show with any comments?
Well, I just want to close and say, you know, if we don't, you know the old saying, if we don't understand our past, we are doomed to repeat it. And I think that if people don't start to understand what happened in the past and what's happening now, and parents don't understand that, regardless of how the relationship ended, I don't want the courts in my family business. That should be numero uno, number one, because once the courts get into your family business, you become their pawn, you become their property, they become your dictator, and you become their slave, and there's nothing that you can really do about it. You lose all rights when you allow the court to come into your system and come into your family and your life to make decisions that they don't care about. They don't have a vested interest in your family. They don't know you or your children or your mother or your father or your aunts or your uncles. They don't care. Half these judges don't even have control over their own lives. Their own children are running rampant and snorting dope or whatever the case is. Their own wives are trying to divorce them or husbands. So they don't have control over their own lives, and we're putting these people in control of making decisions about our life. These parents have to stop being angry and vindictive over the way the relationship ended. Put the kids first and keep the courts out of your business.
Okay. And on that note, I want to thank everyone on the panel, General Parker, Michael McCormick, my co-host, Alex W. Lee, and also our other guest panelist, James Rodriguez. I want to thank you all for hanging in for the second part of Child Custody, Child Support, Friend or Foe. And sometime in the future, in the next couple of months, we're going to have a follow-up. Michael, just so that we know, what are your future plans for lobbying to the government for some reform? I understand that there is a trip in the next month or so to D.C. If you could tell us about that.
What we're doing is we're setting up people, and if people want to get involved with us, all they need to do is drop us an email at info@acfc.org or let us know through Save the Turnips on Facebook, which is where we do child support. We are getting people who want to visit their representatives in Washington, D.C. to deal with this one aspect of this child support issue, and that has to do with the unfair accumulation of arrearages. Right now, the federal law says that state court judges are not allowed to modify arrearages unless the money is owed to the state, and we want to actually change that provision in the law, and we have some people on Capitol Hill who are interested in helping us with that, and we want people from around the country to come and visit and sit down with their representatives, and let's have that conversation with them.
Hey, well, again, I want to thank you all for participating tonight. And I just want to remind our listeners that tomorrow we have Bree Life Radio's Freestyle Thursdays, and the call-in number is 424-220-1862. You can follow Bree Life Radio at Twitter, at Facebook, Bree Life Radio, and for your questions, concerns, or constructive criticisms, of course, you can send emails to BreeLifeRadio@gmail.com. In closing, I just want to tell you all, to my listeners, my guest panel, I love you all on
Thanks,
purpose.
Bree.
Peace and blessings.
Bree.
Yes.
This is General. Can I make a quick comment?
Sure.
I don't know if you're going to have a third show, and if you are, when are you going to have it, but I hope we talk about domestic violence and parental alienation, so that's going to be a show in itself, and it touches on a lot of the child support and custody issues, but at the same
time... I'm sorry, what type of show you would like to have a third part to?
We'll talk about the domestic violence and parental alienation, so that deals a lot with the child support
that show.
And custody also. But at the same time, there's a couple of... conferences coming up. Mike can tell you about the one that's in Chicago. I believe it's from June 6th to June 9th or something like that. It's a family, what's the name of it, Mike? The Family
Association of Family and Conciliation Courts Conference.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's
well,
at the highest.
And so please contact us on Bree Life Radio at Facebook so that we can share that information with the masses of people so that we can get a lot of support. Although I air out of New York, I have listeners all over the country, and I have a large listenership in Illinois, if you couldn't tell. So, you know, I definitely would love to participate and to see to be able to run into my listeners. So,
and there's also another one at the end of June, too, Bree, in D.C. It's about domestic violence and false accusation, and that's
mm-hmm.
put on by an organization called Save Services. So, and you can reach them at saveservices.org, but that's the 28th and 29th of of June, and that's going to be held in D.C. So.
Well, you know what? We might have to have a follow-up part three in about a month, but we'll talk about that in the upcoming weeks. And, again, I want to thank each and every one of you on the panel. I want to thank all my callers for calling in. I want to thank all my listeners. And, again, I just want to tell you, I love you all on purpose. Peace and blessings. And enjoy the rest of your week, gentlemen.
Well, thank you.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.